Welcome. My name is Asam Stolu. I'm a trainee editor of the UEG Journal, and you're listening to the UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal, with the purpose of learning from the most recent evidence and to provide a platform for authors to discuss the most important findings of their research. Hello and welcome back to the UEG Journal podcast. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by another basic quote-unquote scientist, Dr. Celia Escudero-Hernandez, who recently published a paper titled Lymphocytic Colitis Can Be Transcriptionally Divided into Channelopathic and Inflammatory Lymphocytic Colitis to the UEG Journal. I'm so excited to have you here. Celia is actually also one of the new co-hosts of the journal, so it's really nice to be interviewing another fellow trainee editor for the journal. Celia, please introduce yourself and your co-authors.
Yeah, so my name is Celia. I'm a senior postdoctoral researcher in Kiel, Germany, working under the group of Philip Rosenstiel. I was previously in Sweden working with Andreas Munch, which is also another of the co-authors of this study, where I was digging into microscopic colitis. So this is like a little bit continuation of the projects that I had in Sweden in collaboration with my current lab in Germany.
I'm glad that you were able to continue that collaboration. And it definitely shows because there's so much exciting data in the paper that I'm excited to go through now. So you really delved into transcriptomics in this paper. Can you highlight to our audience who are mostly clinicians, what the key transcriptomic differences were that your RNA-seq data identified between the different subgroups of microscopic colitis?
Yeah, so for this manuscript, we wanted to focus on lymphocytic colitis because reviews work, we were focusing more on collagenous colitis. So basically, we wanted to compare lymphocytic colitis first to see what was going on in the disease, because little is known in general in microscopic colitis. So there is no many publications on basic science, and we don't know how the disease is properly working. Actually, we found two different subtypes, transcriptional different patients, right, that we categorized according to the gene expression. So for example, in lymphocytic colitis, we find this subtype that we call it channelopathic, because only ion channels and channels that are related to protein transport in the cells are dysregulated, whereas we have lymphocytic colitis inflammatory in that other condition or subtype that we categorize. Besides this dysregulation of ion channels, there is also inflammation that we were not seeing in the previous channelopathic lymphocytic colitis. Then also when we compare to collagenous colitis, we see that the inflammation in the inflammatory version of lymphocytic colitis is less than the inflammation that we see in collagenous colitis. So apparently we see that this somehow a progressive. So all the microscopic colitis that normally clinicians or pathologists put them together, we see that as the transcription at the molecular level, they differ.
That's really, really interesting. Do you know anything clinically about how the different subgroups may be responding to different treatments, or have they not been looked at in subgroup categories as of yet?
For these patients, we only have active samples, so the patients that were free of any kind of treatment, and they were active at the moment of taking the biopsy. So we didn't really have data on the response, for example, to budesonide. Mainly all these patients in microscopic colitis, they will be exposed at some point to this glucocorticoid to dampen the immune response, and there is no other treatment available in the market. But we don't see any differences from the clinical point of view. Like in these two subtypes of lymphocytic colitis, we see transcriptionally, but the patients clinically, they are the same. They present watery diarrhea, lymphocytic infiltration in the mucosa.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see how patients kind of go through treatment and how what their response looks like perhaps in the future. Can you tell us about how you processed the biopsy samples that you used for RNA extraction? How did you ensure that the biopsies that you extracted the RNA from had lymphocytic colitis present? Did you perform H&E staining on the matched biopsies taken from the same patient?
Yes, exactly. So When the clinicians take the samples from the patient, like we were using always the descending column, and then some samples were sent to pathology department, and of course highly experienced pathologists were identifying this lymphocyte infiltration, or for example in collagenous colitis, a thickened collagenous band under the epithelial cells. And then it was right like after we had the diagnosis that we were processing the samples that were sent for research, like we were keeping those samples in iProtect, that is protectant for RNA isolation for later on. And then we were using just conventional kits to isolate RNA and process the sample for sequencing.
Yeah, because RNA sequencing, I guess, is really, really informative, but you just don't ever quite know where that piece of tissue came from. But yeah, that's really nice that you got matched biopsies and got pathology on those, which is really cool. So this is just a curiosity, but you split your lymphocytic colitis cohort into 1 and 2. What were the differences between those two LC groups? Did they present different symptomatology, or do they subsequently become your channelopathic versus lymphocytic cohorts?
Yeah, so initially I just numbered with numbers. but this lymphocytic colitis 1 is the one that I referred before as channelopathic, with the different ion and transport-related molecules, different gene expression. And then the inflammatory version is what I was calling in the figures LC2, lymphocytic colitis 2, or inflammatory, that presented this inflammation that correlates a little bit closer to the inflammation we see in collagenous colitis.
Okay. And can you talk to us about, so RNA sequencing is really helpful. It gives us lots of transcriptional outputs. But then obviously to understand what the collection of those genes being upregulated or downregulated means, we have to do enrichment analysis, which you've obviously done quite thoroughly in your manuscript. Can you talk to us about which methods you used?
Yeah, I mean, the pipeline for this kind of bioinformatic analysis is quite established. For example, for differential gene expression, we use we always use R, and then the package for this is DSEC2. So that's very well established linear models and false discovery rate for establishing the P values. Then for the gene ontology, or well, the enrichment analysis, we use the gene ontology on biological processes using cluster profiling. Yeah, so it's very basic.
Okay, so you use the gene ontology website, which is a good one to use, I think. And what about for deconvoluting the cell types from your bulk RNA-seq?
Yeah, that one, we use a tool that was developed by the University of Stanford called CyberSort-ESC. So this is a tool for a digital cytometry. It means that it's a machine learning tool that, of course, we want to infer the cell type that is specific for the specific gene expression profile. So, of course, in the biopsy, we have, in this case, just the piece of biopsy mixed with a lot of cells. It's not going to be perfect, but at least it gives us an indication for future studies, like where to focus, which cells could be important or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And what were the key results from your CyberSort analysis? What did it highlight about the immune cell differences across the two different, the channelopathic versus lymphocytic cohorts?
Yeah, well, exactly. We didn't really find differences there on the cell. So I think it will be important to focus more in the future, like trying to translate this into a larger cohort to study the immune cells. Because, for example, the immune cells, of course, they are in the mucosa. There are a lot of infiltration because the pathologists are telling us there are much more than the regular tissue. But I'm suspecting that they are not so active. So people in the past have been checking on the levels of different cell types using flow cytometry, but not the activity level, how active these cells are, or if there are more regulatory cells or not. And also it has been challenging to study lymphocytic colitis because it's very difficult to diagnose them sometimes properly, and it can take years.
That, yeah, of course, poses extra barriers, I guess, to accessing these samples, but hopefully going forward you can expand your cohort and do more validation to really translate your findings to maybe drug targets in future. So going into the science and the biology a little bit further, you show that epithelial cell homeostasis is disrupted in lymphocytic colitis with downregulation of some tight junction proteins. You mostly look at Claudin 2 and 4, if I understood correctly. Did you also look at ecotyrin, or was it just the Claudins that were most interesting?
So, of course, I have gene expression from all the genes, and I was checking different targets, of course, that could be of interest. And then we were focusing on water channel aquaporins because that was a major focus of my work previously for collagenous colitis, and also the Claudins. Claudins, specifically Claudin 2 and 4, are very relevant for the intestine because Claudin 2 is considered as a leaky Claudin, so there is overexpression, there is more permeability, and there is more leakage of what it goes through the lumen of your gas to the cells, to the inner part of your cells. And then Claudin 4 is the tight Claudin. So more expression of this one, then it means it's more tight. For these two, for example, we did some quantification using immunohistochemistry, just not to have only the gene expression data as a way to try to validate. In this case, for example, we didn't see statistically significant differences, but for Claudin 2, for example, we see that the distribution in lymphocytic colitis is more extended in the stroma than the pattern that it shows for healthy controls or for collagenous colitis. We also check on Sornula occludens, so one, because that one is very involved with paracellular transport and it was decreased in the stroma cells of lymphocytic colitis, both of the two subtypes that we described. And finally, ecotyrin, we didn't include any data because we didn't find anything interesting on the RNA sequencing data.
Okay, that's really interesting. Maybe pathogenesis just involves the Claudins and not ecotyrin, which I work mostly on the esophagus, and ecotyrin seems to be a major player in barrier integrity. So it was just a curiosity from my part.
Okay. No, I mean, of course, all these molecules differ a little bit through different areas of the gut and the permeability or the things that the cells need to assess or to tolerate is different in the esophagus, in the duodenum, ileum, ascending and descending colon are also quite different, as we previously saw with the aquaporin gene expression. Actually, I also wanted to mention, like, aquaporins in the collagenous colitis, when we focus that the study, if somebody wants to check the publication, is published already in Journal of Crohn's and Colitis in 2020. There was a very specific downregulation of aquaporin 8 in collagenous colitis. However, for this study in lymphocytic colitis, we see a downregulation of many aquaporins, very unspecific, and we don't know why, of course. We also tried to study the proliferation of these cells, because as you know, the intestinal crypts at the very bottom is where the stem cells reside, and then the stem cells, then they proliferate, and then the cells are going to transit more upper in the crypt and start a differentiation program to be what is a mature enterocyte, right? So they are going to be specialized cells absorbing the nutrients. So it's important to highlight the proliferation marker that we studied, Ka67, because normally in the paper we see in the pictures that in healthy controls, of course, there is only this high proliferation at the bottom of the crypts, whereas in inflammatory processes like collagenous colitis, it goes all over the place, like in all the crypt. That is not normal. So that means that there is some disruption of the functionalities of the cells, because maybe they are proliferating too much and could be not differentiating properly and doing their things correctly. And in lymphocytic colitis, it goes in the middle. So it's not the normal proliferation as we see in the healthy controls, but it's also not that much as collagenous colitis. So it goes in the same way as the inflammation. So it looks like the profile of the cells is altered in a way that looks progressive. So a little bit in channelopathic lymphocytic colitis, much more in inflammatory lymphocytic colitis, and of course, much, much more in collagenous colitis without the immune cells destroying the tissue as it happens, for example, in Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, that, of course, the huge inflammation is damaging totally the intestinal epithelial cells.
That's really interesting. Maybe your work will pave the way towards a new paradigm in which microscopic colitis can be considered as a progressive, linear progressive pathogenesis, which will be really interesting to see more data on. And on that note, what is next for you in your research focus and the progression of this work? Are you planning to translate any of these hits that you found into potential druggable targets?
Well, as a potential druggable target is what everybody wants, right? And actually for aquaporinate in collagenous colitis, that is the key target. But normally drugs are meant to decrease, to inhibit something. In this case, we want to increase, so that's a little bit challenging. There are studies that there are shown that, for example, LPS in different organs, but of course LPS stands for lipoporasaccharide. We don't want to treat the patient with more bacteria or especially pathogenic stuff to alter aquaporin expression. Also, there are some studies that highlight that magnesium sulfate can increase aquaporin 2 and 3 expression, but nothing there is no publication really highlighting for aquaporinate. However, in our previous study, we put on glucocorticosteroids, both the budesonide and the dexamethasone on intestinal epithelial cells, and those could increase the expression of aquaporinate. But of course, as a continuation of this particular work, the first thing of all, of course, is to validate that these two subtypes exist, like, because if this is only at transcriptional level, not at clinical level, but if we find these two different cohorts also in a different country with samples from different hospitals, that will give us much more strength to talk about channelopathic lymphocytic colitis and inflammatory lymphocytic colitis, to discern them specifically for future studies, and also to, I don't know, if any other researcher wants to perform microbiota-related studies or whatever other kind of study to split properly the patients according to different markers. One final note is that also we, in the enrichment analysis, we also tested for microRNAs. And even though this was not the scope of this RNA isolation, still we got some hits that apparently there are some much more microRNA activity in or overexpression in lymphocytes and collagenous colitis compared to Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis that we compared with a previous cohort that was sequenced in my current lab in Germany. So that could be also a good way to go. And now with the Nobel Prize, you know that the microRNAs are very important for genetic regulation and immune response.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be really cool. We'll look out for a new, hopefully multi-center, multi-hospital study where you validate your findings, and also, yeah, maybe move towards looking at microRNAs. I think that is really going to be the future. And even in samples where, you know, you don't have the optimal level of total RNA, maybe microRNAs could be more accessible, perhaps when we think about moving towards like non-invasive testing and all of that way down the line. But yeah,
so far in the European Microscopic Colitis group that I'm part of, we have this biobank network initiative that I'm coordinating to try to gather samples from different countries and of course try to make the studies more robust, this and future studies.
That's really exciting. Thank you so much, Thelia, for your time and for going through your exciting data with us. I hope that our listeners can really benefit from understanding your paper in more detail, and we'll look forward to all your future work. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this interview, and if you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your episodes from. Thank you, and see you again.